Welcome back to the Better Everyday Podcast, where we are unlocking our best self one episode at a time. My name is David Garcia, and this is my beautiful wife, Grace Garcia.
Hello.
Today, we are talking about a topic that everybody wants to know about, but nobody really likes to talk about, and it's finances. We feel like we have a good reason to be talking about finances. Finances is a part of everybody's world. And me and my wife have come a very long way from where we started. And we want to talk a little overview about finances. We're going to have more episodes of finances going more into detail. So if you guys are interested, please comment below and just ask us any questions in regards to finances or our process or our walk. But today is just going to be a general overview. This is a topic that I am very passionate about. So to be honest, we filmed this episode one time already, and I was all over the place, going off on tangents, just going on rants. So we had to do this all over again. My wife was just like, hey, bring it in. Let's just start with an overview. And then after, we can start going into like more details and stuff. Yes. And so today we're going to start off with talking about finances in regards to how we grew up with finances, how our finances was at the beginning of our marriage, things that changed in our marriage in regards to finances, and where we're at right now. Okay. So talking about our past and how we grew up, how do you feel like you were brought up in regards to finances in your home?
I want to say my preteen to teenage years, my dad was trying to be intentional in teaching me, but what that looked like on his end was paying me $20 or so to read books like The Pursuit of Happiness, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. There was one of how even to manage money. It was all girly and things like that. That was the extent, because after I read the book, I read them, one of the $20, of course, but then there was no real conversations after. It wasn't brought up naturally in our life. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of stumped my growth or my curiosity about finances, because it wasn't something always talked about.
Right.
Later on, my mom and dad always, they were hustlers. And so they kind of went from business to business. And then one that really stuck was a network marketing business, which I know a lot of people are iffy about it, or they call it the pyramid scheme, or the, I forget what else. And what really like caught my attention was their emphasis on the reason why they were doing it, which was like for financial freedom. Mm. They kept saying that over and over. They didn't want to be stuck in a 9-to-5. They wanted to travel, raise their kids. And so I kept hearing that, but there wasn't, besides like network marketing, there wasn't really like another avenue of how to get there, or something that interested me in my interest. So that was the extent of our family upbringing.
So just to clarify, you talked about financial freedom, and that's what your parents used to talk about all the time. So could you clarify what financial freedom meant in your house? Like, what was the end goal with financial freedom?
The end goal was to not have a boss. I think it'd be independent, not being told when to work, how long to work, mm-hmm. flexible schedules, being able to then, I know their future was always to purchase real estate, to be able to give to their kids. So it was a bigger dream of just being independent, but also being able to provide for their next generations.
Okay, so financial freedom in your household was about independence, mm-hmm. being able to call your own shots, being able to make enough money to be able to pay your bills, and on top of that, start investing into real estate.
Yes.
Okay, and if that was the definition, do you feel like your family, your parents lived up to that?
I think in regards to the financial independence, they didn't have a boss. They didn't have like a schedule. My mom was always a stay-at-home mom, and then she ended up being the breadwinner with the network marketing. Mm-hmm. My dad was a pastor, so they were able to travel a lot, and they did for church reasons or for financial reasons, like for their network marketing, their business. in regards to then using that money to do real estate, that didn't become a reality. Mm-hmm. But I think they were able to reach some sort of financial freedom. The only thing is the upkeeping. So there was like a couple, like the first week of the month usually where they would stress to try to get in like a quota to be able to see. But to answer to like a boss, they kind of, I think, achieved that.
So they checked one of the boxes, which was they were making enough on their own. They were their own bosses. Mm-hmm. They made their own schedules. And why do you think they never got to the other boxes?
I think maybe lack of knowledge. Their parents before them didn't have the knowledge of how to invest. They came to the States here. And I believe they did get like credit cards and stuff like that. And then they were very generous sometimes. I don't want to say for their own good, because I loved that part of them. Mm-hmm. But their generosity would like kind of sometimes put them over the edge in regards to like always giving to the church and stuff. It'd be at a time even giving their whole car like for ministry. And so they never put themselves first, at least to be able to put them away for real estate. And so, it never came a reality.
Okay. And then growing up with the family that you had, I guess one question is, were you guys always, I guess, in that boat, or were there years before, because you talked about your teen years. So what about your before the teen years? How was life financially back then?
When I was very, very little, I don't remember because I was little, but I do remember hearing stories of how it was very tight, like having no furniture, sleeping on the floor, sitting down on the floor, eating dinners. And then they did purchase a property. They ended up selling it, which they said later on, I asked them what was their financial like regret, and they do regret selling it. They wish they would have rented it out and kept that income coming in. And then we were just renting, and we were living like humbly. It wasn't too extravagant, but we had our basic necessities met. I remember they were able to purchase another home. It was the time where the banks just kept giving people loans out, even if they couldn't afford it.
Okay, so like, it was when with that housing bubble, like 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like 2006 when they got it, 2006, okay. 2007. And my dad at the time, it was just my dad working. Again, he was working for the church. He wasn't getting a lot of money. And they thought it was like from God, like with faith, you know, going in. And it was a beautiful home. And yeah, they lost it 2008 with foreclosure. The bank took it back. Mm-hmm. That was tough. So we had to move a family of six in a small apartment. And yeah, ever since then, we're renting again.
Okay. And then growing up the way that you did, what did you learn in regards to finances, or what stuck to you in regards to finances? How did that affect the way that you manage your own finances at a young age?
I think, well, one of the things I appreciate about my parents is we were never brand people, or I never got Uggs. I never got Hollister. Like I remember looking at that time in middle school and high school when brands were in and kind of wanting that and knowing like it was never, like I got the Bear Claw, like the off-brand stuff. And so that never was of importance to us. And I think my parents, again, lived humbly, but I don't remember ever them talking the lingo of like saving for the future. It was, this is all they had. This is all they could at the moment. Mm-hmm. We would go on family trips and things like that, but I never, like, the vocabulary of saving for the future was never there.
Okay.
I don't know if in their personal conversations. And so I think in my head, I was like, when I work, I want to be able to buy myself nice shoes, nice clothes, like all that stuff. Especially with the family of four, I think they did the best that they could. And so I knew, like, I was materialistic because it was hard. There was a lot of us, and we never got brand stuff. So I was like, if I get my paycheck, I'm going to do that. And then I would, one of the things that stuck to me was I would hear their dreams a lot. So about wanting to purchase a home, wanting to travel, mm-hmm. wanting like these big goals that they had. And unfortunately, my mom never saw that to fruition. She passed away from stage 4 breast cancer at a young age. She was young. And so I never saw that. And so I think that affected me when we started doing therapy. I realized that affected me because we talk about our goals and our dreams, and then I get very like impatient mm-hmm. because the reality is I don't know how long I'm going to live. Like, I would love to live a long life, but I don't know. Anything can happen.
It's not promised.
I can walk down the street and yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think the instant gratification kind of became more urgent for me. Like when I started working, it's like, okay, like I just didn't get whatever I wanted when I wanted. My parents were, during Christmas, I remember they always tried to check a fart checklist. So it was like big events, like most likely I knew they were going to within a reasonable means give me my checklist. Mm-hmm. They tried their best. Same thing, sweet 16, I got a car. So I did live a good
life.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that came with like, okay, I want the things. If I can get it, I want it because that's how they lived. Like if they could, they would.
And so the thing that comes to mind is like kind of like YOLO. Like you only live once. You might as well live it up right now. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's not promised.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you speaking about, you know, your mom and that kind of like being a sort of trigger to you, mm-hmm. you know, because when I first heard it, it made me realize like, oh, dang, like that. It really affected her in that way. And I hadn't thought about it like when I first heard it.
Yeah.
When I first heard it, I think it was in counseling, or was it like a private conversation between you?
I think it was in counseling.
Yeah, it really hit me hard. Just that thought process, and it's true, and it's not something that's easily shaken off. Mm-hmm. Of hey, my mom passed away at a young age. Like, how old was she?
I believe she was like 40. It was 41. She was about to be 41, I think. Mm. I have to make the math. I could be wrong. She was early 40s.
And I mean, just like a small, just dipping into the future before. Like right now, we're talking about the past, but a little small, like dip into the future, like. You know, I'm the type of man that just, hey, I'm about the future. You know, mm-hmm. like we're going to do this with the future. We're going to provide for our kids. We're going to get a house. We're going to be able to live up life. Cause I know like one of the things I think that we both want to do is like travel the world. Yeah. See, I definitely don't want to pass away and not have seen this beautiful earth, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you first said that made me just, it gave me a shock, and it at least gave me, what's the word, sympathy, empathy? Mm. One of those two, where I was just like, I understand, you know, and I get it. And I think that also made me loosen my grip a bit, because it's true, like, tomorrow isn't promised. You know? And it doesn't mean to be unwise, but it means, hey, you don't have to be such a military person, just like, da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. Like, you can live a little, you know, yeah. And you could budget for that.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I appreciate you sharing that with me and then sharing it with the podcast as well, because I know that's something, you know.
Thank you. And I think it shows how, well, we're going to get into a marriage podcast later, but how two different people, like, their feelings can be justified, how there are two sides of each coin, mm-hmm. and it doesn't cancel out the other.
Right.
And because you had a very valid point, too, of wanting to save for the future. Like, mm-hmm. that's smart. To be good stewards of what we have is smart. But I want you to share your, like, how did your past influence of you wanting to, like, keep and save and invest for the future? And where did that come from?
Yeah, so my parents, honestly, the little that I know of their story, I believe my dad came over to Canada from El Salvador. It was around the time of El Salvador having their civil war. Canada was really great at sponsoring, has always been really great at sponsoring, especially the Hispanic community, the Central Americans, having companies allow them to like sponsor people from Central America, bring them over, give them a job, be able to provide for them, let them, you know, establish themselves in the country. And then, you know, they get to just be in a better country, in a better situation, right? Mm-hmm. And so the story that I know is that he came over 15 years old, later went back for my mom around the age of 18, brought her over. They lived in Toronto. I'm not sure if somewhere else. And then they eventually landed in Winnipeg. Mm. Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is, if you guys know where North Dakota is, it's right above North Dakota. It's 2 hours away from North Dakota. And so they didn't have an education. Mm. They basically were just hard workers. And they also, I don't believe they had much of financial education. And so they were just hard workers from the time I remember. They both worked in a furniture company. So they were assemblers and sub-assemblers. I eventually ended up working with them for a year or so. And I remember my parents used to always just work so hard, and they'd come home and they'd be tired. And they were at a young age because they had me when they were 20. My mom was 20. Mm. And so from the time I remember that they were in that job, they were not that old. I want to say like 25, you know, and around 30, I was like 10 years old. And I remember them coming like, oh, we're tired. You know, this is hard work. And honestly, I don't want to diminish what they did, but I'm 34 now. And I'm like, nah, but they did. They worked a lot. They worked overtime. They woke up early. And then around the age of 10, they had my younger brother. And then I remember they had like night shifts and day shifts, and they were, you know, trying to make things happen. But from what I remember, they were pretty much people that were living paycheck to paycheck. I faintly remember them going, either they went into bankruptcy or they were talking to somebody in regards to like possibly going into bankruptcy. I don't remember which one it was, but they were not in a good place. They had bad credit. So they weren't very good with money. And I do remember a lot of fights happening at home in regards to like money. My mom seemed like she loved money, but now at an older age, I understand where she was coming from. But as a younger kid, I was just like, why does she love money so much? Mm. But it was because she just, again, I think that's where I get it from, like the future. She's like, I want to keep building for the future, but things kept messing up and she just kept seeing her. It's almost like building a house of cards and that thing just kept tumbling down. She was just getting frustrated. Like, when are we going to finally build something that's sustainable, you know? And that was for most of my time living with them, was that fight of we're never getting ahead. Like, they eventually bought a house. And I believe they dipped into the retirement fund to be able to. I think that was the only way that they were able to purchase a home. Then they later sold that home and got another home. But having that home was their pride and joy. That was the pinnacle of their finances. And they were so happy and proud because they were no longer renting, but they were actually putting money towards something that was theirs. And that, I think that gave my mom at least a little bit of peace. But in regards to like financial education, they didn't have much. They did the best that they could with what they knew. My dad had issues with gambling at some points. Later on, he had issues with other things. And so there was always something that was like a stumbling stone for them. And from what I gathered from them, like at a young age, I mean, I think I was just young and stupid, like, the moment I hit 18, I applied for a credit card. I got that thing. And I think it was pretty quick that I maxed that thing out. And it wasn't even for anything like cool or anything. Mm. My problem had always been purchasing food. And kind of similar to you, when you're like, oh, like when I have money, I'm finally going to buy things that are like valuable to me, you know? My thing was, when I was young, I got to go to McDonald's. McDonald's was like, McDonald's. You must have done something amazing for you to get McDonald's. Like, I got McDonald's once a month. And that wasn't so much about the money, because McDonald's has never been really expensive. Mm-hmm. It was more like they knew that it wasn't healthy. I wasn't the healthiest kid when I was younger. But for me, it was just like not having it. Like the moment that I made my own money, I was like, I'm going to be able to eat whatever I want. And I think that's why, like, till this day, like, I like going to nice restaurants. And it's just because back in the day, like, I didn't get none of that luxury.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of luxuries, I'd say, that especially, like, I lived in a predominantly white community and I'd see my friends with, like, nice stuff or whatever. And I just honestly felt like the poor kid or whatever. But that is not to take anything away from my parents. My parents always tried their hardest. That I could never take away from them. I remember my parents, I don't know for what reason, but, well, I know for what reason. They love me. That was the way that my dad showed love, was being able to hear what you wanted and try his best to get it. Sometimes he would go into debt to be able to get it, but he would try his best. You know, like, I think everyone just always has that mentality of, like, what I didn't have, I want to give to my next generation, to my kids, right? And so I remember them buying me like a $300 skateboard, which back in the day, like $300. Like, imagine the inflation conversion. Skateboard. Right now, that would be like, I don't know, like $700 probably. Like, it's a lot, right? It was like an Element board. I remember, I was so proud. I was into skateboarding. I sucked, but I was into it. But the point is, like, they tried so hard. But still, like, that's always stuck around with me. Like, I don't want, thinking about it now, I don't want the chains of not being able to get what I want. And I think that's why the moment that I started making my own money, I just bought whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was mostly food. But sometimes I would go shopping and stuff. And my mom used to always get mad because she'd see the same cycle repeating from them to me. And they'd always bug me, just like, you don't have any savings. And... you should have like $20,000 by now. I remember them telling me that. And I mean, I was never the kid that talked back. Never. But in my head, I was just like, bruh, you can't save 20K. You expect me to save 20K? Like, you know, but I think their thought process was their next generation needs to be better than them. And regardless of whatever example that they were setting. You know, and my mom's thing was always like, I'm not the one managing money. It's your dad managing money. So wherever we're at, it's because of him, not because of me. Like, she'd like wipe her hands.
Yeah.
But the point is that I always had like that feeling, and that's what I got from my past. And yeah, I got credit cards. I got a student line of credit, which is basically like a student loan. And I did not finished paying that off until right before I got married. And that was just because I came into some money. And then fast forward, we got married. And now we can start talking about that. We got married. I wasn't allowed to work. Did not have a worker's permit. I came here with a fiance visa. Mm-hmm. I came here, what, 6, maybe 5 days before we got married. Where were you working?
Oh, an appraisal management company. No, don't mention any.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't mention any companies. No, the
Do
first
I bleep
one.
That out or what?
I think so.
Okay.
I was working at an appraisal management company, one of the first ones, because I went back to appraisal. And then I went to Aldo Shoes. It's a bigger chain, so I don't mind saying that company. And I was transitioning. Oh, no. I worked at the second appraisal management company. Mm. And I remember, the beginning, well, you couldn't work. It wasn't your fault. But we got kind of a pricier apartment than maybe we could afford.
Okay. And not only that, let me interject for 1 second. I forgot one key thing.
What?
When we got married, to this day, I personally have not calculated how much that wedding cost.
Oh, yeah.
All I know is this little one right here. I remember getting a call from her and her sister saying that they were looking for a venue here in California. Mm-hmm. And that they had found something in Diamond Bar. And I think it was like $1,200 for a Friday.
It was cheap, yeah.
And I'm like, let's go. $1,200? That's not that bad. And what was it? Like, maybe not even an hour or two later, your sister is the one who called me. And I don't know if you put her up to this, but she called me and she's like,
let me sweet him up.
She said, David, we found Grace's dream venue. First, your sister's calling. Second, she says that, and I'm like, oh, I don't even want to hear the number. And the funny thing is that how you guys presented it, you guys were like, on a Sunday, it's like $15,000. On a Saturday, it's like, I think it was a little bit less, like 12 something. But on a Friday that we're looking to get it, it's only $6,000. I think it was $6,500
or $6,500.
Yeah, no, it was like $6,000. And I mean, again, I think whether you, I don't think you always see it, but whether you see it or not, like I always have that kind of the same thing as my dad. I can't hear something that you want and like not like have it on my mind. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I say yes right on the spot, but like I'll always have it on my mind.
Yeah.
Right. And so you said that, and I'm like, how can I hear the words, we found Grace's dream spot, and me go, nah, go back to the $1,200
one. It was a gorgeous venue. Super gorgeous.
Okay. So I agree, $6,000. Then the venue tells us we're only allowed to use two food vendors, which was their food vendors. And I think each plate was $60 to $65 per person. It was good food. I think we ended up picking steak for everybody or something like that. And so as of right now, that's all I really know. That we spent about, because we invited like about 100 people. I think that's how many plates that we bought. So it was, for me, $12,000 to $13,000, right? Never mind that we got a videographer, a photographer. What DJ, else did we get? A DJ.
Flowers.
The planner. Like, yes. All this stuff. So, like, you're going to already see how we started. And, like, now we're so much wiser that I think, well, that's a good question. Like, if you were to go back, would you have done it the same way? Yeah, you would have. No. I don't even know why I asked that.
I was actually thinking, like, in a perfect scenario, I would have been like, I would save that and easily put it to down payment of a house. Mm-hmm. But looking back, not only was my mom going to pass away like a few months ahead of that, she passed away. Mm-hmm. So we got married in July and she passed away in February. Mm-hmm. That was one of the last times all our family was together.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, if we just eloped, like it would have been beautiful. But I'm like, I wouldn't have had those crucial memories.
I mean, I cannot take what you just said away, but also on the other side of the coin.
I know. We could have had a house. It would have.
No, not just that. It's just like, yeah, we could have still had the same family over and just done a cheaper wedding.
True.
The people are still going to be there. And your side of the family is so like crazy. Like they don't need much to be able to have a good time.
But I don't know. Till this day, every single wedding we go to, I think it's like a pride issue or like a, like honestly, and not just because it's our wedding, but everyone says it too. Mm-hmm. Like our wedding was the best wedding.
Yeah, and you're so proud of that.
It was amazing.
Okay, but we paid a pretty price for it.
It was about $20,000.
Okay, there you go. Around $20,000.
We still don't know the exact number. It wasn't too much over, but it was around $20,000.
Okay, so you can already see how we started our marriage because we knew that I didn't have a job coming
lined
in.
Up, yeah.
We knew that you weren't making that much money. Mm-mm. And that you picked a pretty pricey apartment. And we could have been much wiser.
Yeah.
We could have made that money work for us. Because not only did we spend that much money, but we went on a honeymoon, which we were supposed to go to Mexico. I couldn't get out of the country, so we had to shift really quick, and we ended up going to Miami. And in the middle of our Miami trip, we ran out of money.
Yep, I remember. And he went to the casino.
I ended up going to play poker, and I made, I don't know, like $400 to like make us survive for the rest of the trip.
But that also shows, like, I love my parents. I love my family. That also shows, like, I remember my mom, at least, that she was very I think, involved in my wedding planning and things like that. At least when it comes to the finances. And not only did she help us a lot, but that question was never asked me. Like, are you able to afford this comfortably? Or when David comes, this rent, is it going to be doable? It was just like, oh, you can afford it now? Kind of do it type of thing, which shows how our history was, you know? So I think I brought that. Like, that's the mentality. Like, right now in this moment, can you afford it? Mm. Not, is it wise a month from now? Is it going to be wise when you get a job? And so I'm not, like, putting the blame, but that's just kind of where we come from. And, yeah, like, our honeymoon, you said we couldn't even afford. We didn't have money on the trip. We come back to this apartment. And I remember you got, like, thanks to Carrie, a job. It was paying $100 a day, whether he worked 2 hours or whether he worked 12, 15 hours building fences in the heat. That was humbling.
Yeah, that was a hard job. But I was willing to do what I needed to do. It was $100 cash every single day. And sometimes it would be 6 hour shifts. And sometimes, I think it was one time, it was like, what, 16 hour shift or something like that? It was,
yeah.
Like, disgusting.
And to make rent meet, like, we were living, I remember I had to sell all my wedding stuff, right? Like, any decor I got, like, I sold that first. Mm-hmm. And then my parents had, like, a spare, like, dryer or something. And I was like, can I sell it for you and, like, make some money off of it? And my mom's like, yeah. I sold things my parents would give me, like, of value to me. Like, Apple Watches, and my mom gave me Chanel boots and, like, things like that. Like, anything I could come across, mm-hmm. we were selling it to just make rent.
Yeah, we were struggling at first. And you know what? I honestly don't, I don't know if you felt like it, or maybe I'm having fish brain, but I don't remember us super duper struggling. Or maybe it was because we had other issues at the time. But I didn't really think about, like, the financial part.
I think we were stressed about finances, but we weren't like in a, this life sucks because we're tight with money. Mm-hmm. I think we knew this is temporary. Like, this is because you don't have your visa. I don't think we were like, oh, life sucks. Like,
yeah.
We're stuck here.
Yeah.
I think we knew we're going to get out of here. Like, we had faith. Like, that's mm-hmm. why we got that expensive apartment, because we're like, we had faith.
You had faith. I mean, you got that, I feel like, from your mom.
Yeah.
Like, your mom was just like, yeah, just do it. Go ahead. Like,
God,
it's all going to work out. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like,
but it did.
I come from a different story. It doesn't work like that.
But it did.
So, yeah, like, we started off not with great financial habits. Mm-hmm. I remember at first I was just like, I don't want to deal with the finances. You deal with the finances. I remember... Yeah. Used to call, like, on a weekly basis, Wells Fargo, please, it's an overdraft fee of $35. Please just forgive it. Like, we can't handle it. I don't know what excuse. I don't know if you had, like, a list of, like, 20 excuses and you were just going down the list. But I think every single time you at least got something back, huh?
They started forgiving it. And then they'd go down to, like, 50%. And then they went down to, like, only a portion until they're like, no. Yeah. I'm sure they had a log of, like, how many times they'd call.
And that I do remember, it was getting frustrating. And it felt we were failing. And at that time, I didn't know how to take responsibility. And usually when a man doesn't take responsibility, they find somebody to blame. And I was just like, you're messing up and you're not looking at it. And I think, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people can
relate
to this of, we were, like, the type of couple that didn't want to open their bank account.
Oh, no, I get anxiety. Every time I had to log in, I'd get major anxiety. And not only that, like, we're people, how we said, I come from a generous household. Mm-hmm. And we have faith. I remember I wouldn't tithe until the end. So sometimes I wouldn't even tithe because we never had it. And when it was when we started having the conversation of, like, this is not a good, like, what's going on? There's never enough. You're always going over a draft. And then you found out I wasn't tithing and you're like, what? Like, why are you not tithing? And I'm like, well, we don't have any money. Mm-hmm. And that started the conversations of, who said I was going to be handling the money? Is this a good idea? And that's when you started taking over.
Yeah. And even when I started taking over, I mean, it wasn't great. And it just goes back to, like, we didn't have any financial education. Mm-hmm. Like, we were only doing, quote unquote, the best that we knew how.
Yeah.
And so we were struggling. I think I ended up getting a different job. I was like low data, like running wires and stuff, which was a cool job. I got to go all over California and stuff. But again, it didn't pay that well. And but little by little, I feel like, you know, my pay was going up, because after that I got another job at an actual corporation.
You got your work permit finally.
Yeah, I finally got my work permit. I was able to work, find a real job. But I personally, I went through ups and downs. I think for that low voltage job, I got laid off, and it was like a couple of months that I didn't have a job. I was staying home with Elijah. That was around the time of Elijah. And having Elijah was another bill as well. All the diapers and all the wipes and the doctor's visits and mm-hmm. having, I don't remember if we had coverage, like health coverage, but I don't remember if it was good or not. I think actually for Elijah,
as soon as I gave birth, they come in wheeling and they're like, so how are you going to pay?
Yeah, that's something that,
and we're like, what?
That I'm not a fan of in America.
So can I just enjoy my child?
Feel like you're buying your kid, mm-hmm. you know? But anyways, we were not in a good place financially. I remember to one point we were living in Downey and we were at our last straw.
I don't know why you say locations or company names.
Why? We were in Downey. We're not in Downey anymore. Anyways, we were in Downey and I remember we were exhausted. Like, we had exhausted all possibilities. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to make rent. We were short on, I think, a couple other bills as well. Like, it was the end of the line for us. And I'm like, there's only one thing that we can do.
Last resort.
Last resort. And it was you calling your dad. And you were just like, no. And I'm like, yes. You're like, no.
Because it wasn't like $100, $200. It was like more, like $700, $800.
Yeah, it was a nice chunk of change. And I remember crying. You called your dad and you're like, I need to borrow this money. And you were like, I wish I didn't have to ask you, but we're at that point.
Mm-hmm. I was on like short-term disability, so I wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think they give you 60% or something like that.
Yeah.
You didn't have a job, or you just started or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was tight and I dreaded it. And you were like, trust me, I wouldn't want you to ask your dad if there was any possibility. I remember crying and he did. And my dad was so nice about it. Like, this is what a dad wishes and they could do. Like, and you need me the most. Like, I'm here for you. Like, don't worry about it.
And your dad knew. Your dad knew, because I think I've seen your dad in other situations that have to do like finances or whatever. And he's usually like, you keep trying. You know, like mm-hmm. figure out a way, right? But that time, I don't remember him like giving you any like pushback like that. I think he sensed it like, oh no, they're at the end of the line. Like they need my help.
Yeah.
And your dad came to the rescue. Shout out to your dad. Thank you.
I love you, Daddy.
He helped us, and that was the one and only time, right? I think little by little, we were just like, something needs to change, you know? And it's something needs to change, but we didn't know exactly what. We didn't know how. Although, like, okay, now seeing in hindsight, it's just like, there's so much resources out there. Like, guys, like, for the ones listening, like, there's so much resources out there. Like, there's YouTube, there's books, there's a lot.
Yeah.
So if you want something to change, like, you just got to look for the tools, right? But at the time, we were just like, how?
Mm-hmm.
I had gotten a better job, but we still, you know, were struggling, living a paycheck to paycheck, basically repeating at least my past stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely where I didn't want to be. And especially with a kid, you know, having a kid kind of like changes your perspective, makes you want to like dig deeper. And I remember, forget when it was, but I had read already the Dave Ramsey Money Makeover book. And I don't know if, obviously I didn't take it seriously because I learned nothing from it. I think I just read it for the sake of reading it. don't remember a lick of what I read. Mm-hmm. But it was a year or maybe a couple of years after that, you read the book.
And I don't even know how I started. Like, why did I pick it up?
And this is where everything changed. Mm-hmm. In the moment that you picked that book up, that's when our life shifted. Because you read it and you were like, homeboy, did you read this book? And I was like, yeah. No, you didn't. It's like, yes, I did. You're like, no. If you read this book, our finances would be so much better right now.
Yeah. Well, I was being convicted by the book. Like, I should change. I'm the problem. And mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, why haven't you, like, what he's saying, there's so much truth. Like, why haven't you suggested this tip or this tip? And I kind of told you, you need to reread it.
Yeah. And that's honestly where our life started to change. And I don't remember, did we end up reading it together? Or did you read it first and then I read it after again?
Yeah, I read it and then I'd send you like my notes for like each chapter, like the highlights. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so basically, let's just say that we both read it mm-hmm. together. And that's when we started taking it in. And we were in debt. We were living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And we read the book and we started making those small changes. And honestly, just a quick overview of the small changes. The first thing that he basically says is live below your means.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people do not do. If that's you, please pay attention. Live below your means. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? You make, let's say, combined with your spouse, $50,000. Live below $50,000.
Yeah.
It is the key.
No credit cards.
No, well, that comes later because some people are already in credit card debt. Mm-hmm. We were already in credit card debt. We had a car lease. Like, we had a good amount of debt. And so, first and foremost, though, live below your means. What does that mean? Make a budget. You know exactly how much you make.
We never had a budget.
We never had a budget.
I always would say, I would always prideful and like, we never argue about finances because
we never took it seriously.
We never were conscious about it. Like, yeah. We never had a conversation. Could we afford this? It's like, oh, I feel like eating out. Let's eat. Let's do it.
The only time we would have, quote unquote, tiffs.
Was with the overdraft.
Is with the overdraft because freaking, you know, that's one of the things that grinds my gears is when, okay, so we were using the debit card for all that, which is the Wells Fargo debit card. And for whatever reason, sometimes whenever we would purchase like food, like eating out or whatever, it wouldn't show up until like 2 or 3 days later. Yeah.
And we didn't know that we didn't have enough.
Yes.
Those pending.
So we were like, oh, we're good. There's still $300 in the bank account. 2 to 3 days later.
I forgot about that.
I was like, oh. And I'd be like, Grace, where did the money go? You spent it. And she's like, look at the bank account. And I'd be like, oh my goodness. Why do they take forever to show up on the statement?
It was like the weekend or something. Yeah. That would be a headache for us.
Oh, what a pet peeve that was. Mm-hmm. Like I was... That was so frustrating. But our problem was that as
we
well.
We never knew what was in the bank account, how much we were spending.
Yes, we never knew how much. And also, we were eating out a lot.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, no big deal. Like, that's I feel like the majority of people that are, like, living in our situation, that's probably, like, your biggest issue is how much you eat out.
Mm-hmm. Not being conscious of it.
Yes. And it's just like, and, I mean, it's the American way. Mm-hmm. Easier. Tastier, don't have to work for it. Don't have to go home and or go to the grocery store, take it home, cook it. You know, that's
clean it.
Clean there. That's your pet peeve right there is cleaning it. Mine is like I'm hungry and I'm watching myself make this food while I'm starving. Like, that's the worst.
Yeah.
And so that was our thing. And so when we read that book, it was like live below your means. So start making a budget. Whether you want to or not, like that is the first key. Live below your means and make a budget.
Mm-hmm. And now that you're saying that, I remember in the first stages, we started texting each other how much we were spending to try to keep track.
Yes.
Like, this is what we're starting off with, mm-hmm. right? Let's say we just got paid. It was like $400 or whatever. And then we would minus $20 eating, minus, like we started trying to be conscious of it because we couldn't trust Wells Fargo. So I remember always like texting like our little financial chat.
Yeah, it would be like El Pollo Loco, $19.99.
Yeah.
There's $200 left or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's times where we'd get lazy and we wouldn't do it. And
we'd forget, yeah.
We'd go like, oh, what the heck? Like, we didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
But live below your means, make a budget. And the budget should not be a paycheck to paycheck budget. Mm. You should have at least a small portion of that budget go towards savings. Mm. Because the next step is making an emergency fund. So the crazy thing is that depending on what article you're reading, it's anywhere between 44 to 55% of Americans cannot afford a $1,000 emergency. So Dave Ramsey tells you, put your first goal before you start paying off debt, put $1,000 in your emergency fund.
Because we never had any savings.
No, we
didn't. We'd have savings and then we'd have to take it out immediately.
We dig into it. Mm-hmm. And that was, again, something that my parents used to do as well.
Yeah.
They would make a savings and then, let's just dip into it and dip into it. And it's gone. Mm. And so, a lot of my history was repeating within us. And so we put $1,000 in our emergency fund because a lot of emergencies are within $1,000. I mean, only the crazy ones are above $1,000. But $1,000 is a good starting emergency fund. Starting emergency fund. Pay attention to that first word, starting emergency fund. And then after that, Dave Ramsey teaches you pay off your debt, snowball effect. So line them all up. I think it's from smallest to the biggest. Mm-hmm. And you pay the minimum on all of them, but on the smallest one, you pay it off as much as possible. And the thing is, when you finish that paying that off, it's not that you stop paying it off and then you just kind of do the same thing. It's no. If you were paying $50 a month on that smallest debt, you're now applying the minimum paying to the next one plus the $50 that you were paying to the smallest one. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's a snowball effect. It just compounds. Because once you're done that second one, everything that you applied to the first and second one now goes to the third one. And now it just starts compounding and you're busting out. And you finally realize, you know what? I was paying, let's say, $800 to credit cards every single month. And you get to a point where you finally finished. And guess what? You have an $800 that you can put in my books to savings. And that's where we kind of start going into the psychology of money, which will be for another episode. But it's very important because a lot of people think now that I'm out of debt, this money that I was paying to debt, now I can spend it. I can get the stuff that I want. I can spend it on a vacation. And all of a sudden, you're not, because the next thing that you should do after paying off the debt is now you build a emergency fund of 3 to 6 months. Mm. That means you're taking all the bills that you have. And then let's say in a month you pay with your rent and all your bills. Let's say, let's put a number to, in California, probably $3,500. No, let's do 3,000, let's do 3,000. So then what you want to do is you want to times that between 3 and 6 times.
18. I know that one.
Yes. There you go. So if you want 6 months worth of emergency fund, you would need $18,000, which seems like a big thing, but it's 100%, 1,000% possible because me and you have done it.
But that's the thing. When I read the book, I get all fired up. I can do this. I can do this. Mm-hmm. But I think once reality starts setting in, we were never able to save $1,000. I remember when we saved that, I felt like, wow, we did it, so accomplished, because we've never done it before.
Yeah.
And even buying a house or saving so much, $18,000, that seemed so far out for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first thing, before you even start, believe that you can do it.
Yeah. But the way that you believe that you can do it is by doing the math. And that's the part that's hard for some people. I think it wasn't so hard for us at the beginning because we were both no. I think it was still kind of fresh, you asking your dad for money. So it was no. Something's got to change.
Yeah.
And it that's usually what it takes for somebody to be the switch is flipped.
Yeah, rock bottom.
It's time to get this thing going. And so we cut back on a lot of things, especially eating out. Mm-hmm. We gave ourselves a small budget for eating out, small budget for groceries. I remember it was like $60 a week. Like, we chopped it up.
And then I remember at that point, it came a decision to leave in the car. I was like, Dave Ramsey says we shouldn't be leasing. And we got the car right before I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a good idea. And now we're discussing. And I remember in the beginning, you were like, no, trying to rationalize. If it breaks down, we just take it in, whatever. It'll be easy maintenance. And I was like, no. And then I heard a video. Dave Ramsey does his podcast where a caller had the same dilemma, like the exact same dilemma. They mm-hmm. just leased. Everything was exactly the same. And I'm like, look, David, look, I sent it to you. And I was like, if he gave him that advice, that's what the exact same advice he'd give us. Because you were saying like, no, if he heard our situation, he would change his mind. And that's all you needed for the video. So we saved $5,000 in like 3 months, purchased the car, gave up the lease. And that helped us a ton getting out of like debt.
Yes, because your money, your income is your, what does it say? Your income.
Your most powerful tool to save.
Something like that. Your most powerful tool to save. And he basically was like, you shouldn't be having a car payment. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for it.
Let alone lease. Not even like to buy.
Exactly. And again, we can go into the details, which we will in the later episodes in regards to like, you know, getting a car and the reasons why not to buy it from a dealer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was basically like, you need to eliminate that car payment, that you can save $5,000, you can save $5,000, and that you can buy a car for $5,000, you can buy a car for $5,000.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. We're like, okay, let's do it. Like, I wasn't like fully convinced, but I'm like.
That's the thing, because we didn't know anyone around us doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we couldn't. We thought it was not the best thing.
Right.
But I think at least what helped me was that video of like, look, someone's in the same situation and they could do it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, whether I believe we could do it or not, doesn't matter. But like, someone did it.
Yeah.
And so we're like, let's just try it. And we did it. And I think that even gave me more feel of like, let's keep going. Like, I don't know what we're capable of. I don't want to say now and like we can't do something because we did the baby steps behind us.
And the crazy thing is like, you have that thought of, I don't know if I can do it, you mm-hmm. know, but then you do it. And I remember giving that car back. And we even had like extra charges because with leases, it's like, oh, if you go over like a certain amount of mileage, you got to pay X amount. And I think we paid like, I want to say like $1,000 extra or whatever. And I remember we had the money for it.
Yeah.
And felt so good. I gave it. And then
they ask, like, do you want to lease another one or something like that?
Like, heck no.
Like, yeah.
But we got this other car. And for me, it's always been a thing like, Grace, like, do you realize like we're not, I think we were paying like $320, $350 mm-hmm. or was it like $400, something like that. And I'm like, all that money is going towards savings now.
Yeah.
And it was like such a beautiful feeling. But it's like, it's crazy. It's on the other side of faith that you get to see like, oh, like it works, mm-hmm. you know, like, and we got a decent car. It was a 2013 Honda Insight.
We still have it.
And we still have it. Yeah. It works great. And that was one of the best decisions that we did because we were at the crossroads around that time, whether we buy that. It was a Toyota Corolla. Do we buy it straight up? Do we get a new lease? And I think we had agreed that we weren't going to get a new lease. But I was like, what if we just buy it straight up? Mm-hmm. And then they gave us the math on it. And had we done that, like, we'd be in debt.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, nope. We gave it back. Bought a car cash. And from that point on, we only had... Our only car expense was insurance and the gas for it. And that's when we started chipping away at debt because the car thing happened around the time that we were making all these decisions of like, let's get our life in order.
Yeah.
And so after the car, we started chipping away at debt. We got rid of debt. And around when we got rid of debt, that's when things started to change a little bit because you were all in. And I loved it. We're like, let's do this.
Yeah.
But towards the end, when we were getting close to finishing the debt, I saw you twitching. And you're like, I need money. Because it's like you said, like, you're at the time, I would call you a spender. I don't think I would call you that anymore, by the way.
I graduated?
I think you graduated. But back then, you were a spender. You needed to spend. You needed it. Like, it was, like, therapeutic for you. It was, like, you were drowning, and you spending was, dopamine, like, keeping you, like, afloat.
Mm-hmm.
And you started to twitch, and you're like, we're close. And, like, you're somebody who bugs. And you were like, babe, can I have more money? Can I have more money? Like, we're doing good. And in my mind, like, I was all in. I had read the Dave Ramsey book. I was completely 100% in. And around that time, I think I started investing in investments, like on Robinhood, and it was going pretty good. And so my thought process was, the moment we get out of debt, we're going to build that 3 to 6 months. I think we landed on 3 months or whatever. And then anything after that is going completely into investments. This is the way I had really just locked in on, your money needs to make you more money. Put those suckers to work.
Yeah.
And so I was fully committed, and I'm black or white. I'm 100% in or 100% out. And so I was running full force. I'm like, no, we're going full force on this. And you're somebody that when you have something in your head, you don't let it go. And so you were like, no, David, I need money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think around that time when we got out of debt is when we landed on, it's a little embarrassing to say now, but that you were going to get a $25 allowance. Granted, she was not. We were not suffering per se. I'm okay with sacrificing. I was fine. I don't need like a lot of nice stuff or whatever. Like, I'm not a complete minimalist, but in certain areas I am. And so, but you were like, I need my Starbucks. I need my time to go eat out. And so the $25, it had a name of just grace on it, where you could put it in your Cash App or whatever, and you could do whatever the heck you wanted with it. But everything else, like, I mean, we'd still get groceries. We'd still eat. We had a budget for eating out. It wasn't great. It wasn't great. You're smiling right now, but it wasn't great. But
when I told them I had $25, they were like, that's it?
Oh, yeah.
Help me, poor.
Yeah. But my thought process was like, okay, like, if we're all in, we're all in. Like, we need to do all this, because then I had fully, like, invested my heart and soul in, this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got the feeling of, this is possible, because beforehand I was like, having a house, that's not possible. Having a lot of wealth, that's not possible. I didn't see how it could be possible.
Yeah.
The only way making it possible is like being a doctor and making like $250,000 a year or whatever. Like, but I didn't have no sort of degree or nothing. And I'm like, there's no way. But when we started getting our life together in regards to finances and I started investing, I'm like, there is a way. And I'm like, I need to go full force. Like, I just felt like, I don't know, like one of those warriors in an army, like, charge, like, we're going full force. We're going to defeat this thing or whatever. But eventually you were like, you were the soldier all the way in the back, like chewing their nails, like, it's a lot more comfortable over here. Like, can we just take a break? Can I like enjoy myself a little bit?
Yeah.
And that's how we came to the $25, and you got to like spend it on whatever. And to me, I was like, that should be good. Like, I don't get $25. And we even have our friend Nate, be like, bro, do you get $25? I'm like, no, I don't need $25. He's like, bro, you need $25. I don't. I'm fine. Like, and I felt fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I was just going full force, and that's when we started, like, butting heads in regards to finances. And I remember later on when we went into counseling, we started, like, to unpack that all. And for you, it was just like, homeboy, I'm working so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you went to school, or you went back to school when it was after Elijah, right?
He was 1 year old.
And you were still in school when Uriah, you were pregnant with Uriah, right?
Yeah.
And so you were working and going to school.
And watching a toddler because we didn't have any, like...
Yes.
It was during COVID.
And doing that. And then when you finally started working as a teacher, Araya was like a couple months old.
She was 4 months old when I started.
And so like now I can finally like slow down and understand, like, well, especially after going through counseling, I'm like, yeah, like you were going through a lot. And you had landed, your first school that you worked at was just not the business. It was bad. I mean, you guys have heard the story. Like, you came home crying every single day of the first week. So, like, I can understand now that for you to hear, like, I get $25 out of the thousands of dollars that I make.
And, yeah, it was my first, like, big girl job. Not, like, my other company paid me good for not having a degree, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Like, I was content. But this was, like, my first, with my degree, having, like, my career. And I was so excited. Like, I'm making big girl money. And, yeah, not being able to touch it. Like, I never saw it. I never could touch it. Nothing. And I remember saying, oh, when I have a bad day, I'm going to get Starbucks. And you're like, you're getting Starbucks every day. And I was like, this is my bad day. Like, I'm getting having a bad life. And, yeah, I think the whole combination of not liking my job, having $25, like, our arguments were just, it was bad.
Yeah. And then my thought process was just like, no, we need to go full force. Mm-hmm. How are we going to be able to do everything that we want to do? How are we going to be able to buy a house if we don't, you know, continue moving forward at this pace? How are we going to be able to afford trips if we don't keep going at this pace? Like, mm-hmm. all the things that we wanted to do, I'm like, are on the other side of hard work and like sacrificing. And you were just, see me, you know, after counseling, you just basically said, like, I don't even care if you give me what I want. I just want you to, like, see me.
Yeah.
I'm doing hard work. This is hard for me. Sacrifice is hard for me. Like, doing all these things is hard for me. Like, not being with my kids is hard for me. And I just want you to see me. And see you explain it to me was me just being like, I wish I could give this to you. Mm-hmm. I wish I could. But we have goals to do, and like, I promise you, like, there's going to be better tomorrows, you know? Mm. And, it was a tough time. It was a tough time because it's every so often.
I think it got to a point where I even told you, I don't want to buy a house.
Yeah.
Because not because it wasn't a dream of mine, but because I was so fed up with, like, the savings and, like, never meeting the budget. And it was just this fight we could never win. Mm-hmm. That I was like, I don't even care anymore. Like, I just don't want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so tough. And I remember, I hope you're okay with me sharing this, but there'd be times where, like, you thought, like, I had this love for money. And I remember, like, when you used toxic. To get mad, you'd threaten me and you'd be like, I'm going to spend all the money and blah, 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 blah. And for me, it was never just about the money. It was like, I'd always just yell at you and be like, you're taking money away from my kids.
But I remember it was so funny that when we brought this up to the therapist, she's like, how much? The therapist was like, that sounds like a crazy wife. So she's like, how much? And I was like, oh, I'd get like Starbucks to go to Target, like $30-$40, like Amazon. And she's like, oh my God. She laughed.
Yeah, she did. But like, yeah, no. But there was times where you spend a couple $100. Just like in your head at that moment, it was like just to teach me a lesson, like that you could. It was basically just a threat. Like, I could blow this all up if I wanted to.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if any of the things ever got to you of me, because I would always just try to put my, like, our kids in front of you, not for the sake of you pegging them, but for the sake of, like, remember why we're doing this. Like, you're not taking money away from me. You're not. I don't care about the money. If it was just me and you, like, whatever, let's go live life. But we're doing this for these kids. These kids' tuitions for college is going to be like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, we need to save. We need to buckle down. We need to invest. Like, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. Please. My thing was just like, please don't do this to my kids.
Yeah.
And I honestly, like, I'll have a soft spot. I'll always have a soft spot for underdogs. In that story, I saw my kids as the underdogs because they didn't have a say. They didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I was being their advocate, And I was like, Grace, please don't do this. Like, well, I wouldn't say please don't do this. We would be mad. So
we'd be toxic.
Oh, we would be going back and forth like really bad. And I like just like, don't do this. Yeah. Like, this is for the kids. And I don't know if it went over your head or you didn't care or whatever. But point is, we used to fight a lot about it. And after counseling, I started to understand what your thought process is, and especially after you shared the thing about your mom, mm-hmm. I began to understand you more in regards to like, yeah, that sucks. Like if I put myself in your shoes and to see your mother be promised all these things and she never got to see it, you're probably like, Humble, you promised me all these things. You can't promise me that I'm going to see all these things.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, again, putting myself in your shoes, like I'm sacrificing all this stuff. I'm sacrificing being able to like get Starbucks whenever I want, eat out whenever I want, like go hang out with my friends whenever I want. I think you were even sacrificing. I remember you had like a beauty budget and you could only go to like get your nails like done once a month or twice a month, maybe if you were lucky and you wanted to get your eyelashes done and all this stuff. Like, and like in between the lines, you're like, you're making me sacrifice all these things and you can't promise me that tomorrow's promised to me. You can't do that. But here I am on the other side of the coin. Like, we just need to believe, though, like, that we can, like, that we're putting all this, like, we're sowing all these seeds and we're going to see the fruit. And, like, yeah. It was tough. And that's when our counselor, therapist was just like, David, you see everything black and white, homeboy. You need to chill out. Mm. You need to start seeing colors. And that I did not like at all. But I think I didn't like it because of the way like that she presented it. Because with me, it's always like a math equation to me. I know what the right answer is. Mm-hmm. But I need to know the in-betweens of the equation for me to fully understand and be like, I get it.
Yeah.
And so with you sharing with your mom, I started to understand it a little bit more. And then not only that, but I think I started accepting it as well. Like, it's okay to budget for good times. And we ended up finding a good, what I would say right now is a good balance. So basically right now, we have our two normal jobs that goes towards the house. We budget with that. And we also have side gigs. Anything that we do with the side gigs, basically we get to keep 25% of the side gigs. So like I say, if you make an extra $1,000, you get to keep $250. And I think you get like, you do supervisory at your job, which you get to keep all of that as well. So like,
but I hustle, but I want a big my fund money to be big.
Yes. And then we make deals, like you do summer school and you get to keep 50% of all that summer school money, which is a nice chunk of change.
Yes. I can't wait.
It's like you like throwing it up in there and you're like, but I feel like that system that we made was a good one, because in my eyes, at least, it's just like, okay, you get to keep 25% of your side hustle, which makes, it gives you an incentive. Like if I make more, I mm-hmm. get more. And not only do I get more, but I'm also attributing more to the house,
yeah,
which gets us closer to our goals and in a faster pace.
But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like what kind of switched our thinking of working as a team, mm-hmm. I think was that finding, how you said, a sweet spot, yeah. Budgeting for the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that helped you. What helped me was not feeling like a failure, because every single, and I told you this in therapy, every single month you'd talk about the budget and we always failed. We always failed. And I was like, if you guys know anything about the Enneagram, I'm a 3 and I love achieving. And if I feel like I can achieve, I think that's why we did so good with the debt and stuff, because I saw it. I felt like an achiever. I felt awesome. Mm-hmm. When it comes to saving, for whatever reason, like our budget, always under. And it was like, that would be a fight. You'd say it was me. I'd say, well, you're not helping me. Like, be conscious over the weekend what we're spending. And it would be like this blame game. But I felt like always losing. So it's like, what the heck is the point? Until we started budgeting for miscellaneous, budgeting for, like, now, then we were like, oh, we're over. And I was like, what? Like, oh, we made our budget. Yeah. What? That is, like, fuel for me to keep going.
Yeah.
So So I feel like that also kind of like helped me flip my switch. Like, let's work as a team.
And so on top of the Dave Ramsey Money Makeover, which changed our lives, later on, what was it, like a year ago, we also got a financial coach. Mm-hmm. We both agreed that we needed a third person, unbiased, because we had friends giving their opinions. And
they would get heated.
All biased.
And it'd get heated when we'd talk about it. Yeah. Like, we couldn't move past a certain point.
And so we found a Dave Ramsey certified financial coach.
Which now my husband is certified, y'all.
Yes, I am. let me know if you need help. So we reached out to a Dave Ramsey certified financial coach. And I remember when you agreed to it, I was so happy. Because I'm like, yo.
No, but I remember in the beginning telling you we should reach out. And you're like, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be $100 an hour.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, let's do it. I was kind of haggling you to do it first. Mm-hmm. But then you were happy because you wanted to see my point be debunked.
Yeah, it always, you usually give me ideas. And we go back to, like, I think a couple of episodes before, I told you, like, you've been kicking my butt every so often in our life. And that's yet another thing where you kick my butt. And it took time for me to get there, but I got there. And so we got a financial coach. The financial coach was about like $130
for the month.
That included, yeah, that's a whole month. So that includes the 30-minute consultation to see what your goals are, get to know you a little bit more. Then it's a one-hour session. It was a little more than 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And just, I gave her our Excel sheet. I already had things broken down. I'm like, here's my Excel sheet. All of our expenses. She helped us, you know, refine things. Mm-hmm. And then she would reach out a couple times a week, especially on the weekends. Hey, I know the weekend's coming. I know people usually tend to eat out. I'm going to try to encourage you. Out of 3 meals on the weekend, try to eat 2 at home, maybe 1 outside, right? And it was so helpful for us. I was happy initially because I'm like, homegirl's going to get it. I'm like,
and I hated it. The first call, I hated it. She was like, your nails? Forget about it. Your lashes? Forget about it. And I was
over there cheering like, yeah.
But again, because she told me to cut so much things that I thought it was like impossible.
Yeah.
But on the follow-up, she was like, you guys are doing amazing. And that, as a 3, is the fuel I needed to keep going.
Yeah. But also, okay, so again, heart for the underdog. I remember you were not a happy camper after that first call. Mm-hmm. And initially before the call, I was happy. I'm like, this girl's going to get it. Like, she's going to hear everything I've been saying over and over again. She's going to hear from an unbiased person.
Yeah.
She has no emotional connection to us.
Oh, because we were going in with the idea. She's going to tell us to move. She's going to tell us we can't afford our living in California. And you were like, no, she's going to say, just budget. Mm-hmm. For it. And I was like, no. And she told us, you guys can totally get a house in California. And that's why we were so happy, because she proved me wrong.
Yeah, but more than that, I knew that she was going to tell us just, you need to cut back more.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was initially happy. But when she kind of like burst your bubble completely, I saw your face. And I don't remember exactly what was said, but I remember after, like, you seem defeated.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we can talk about it. Like, let's work things out. Because, like, I'm not, as much as some people might think that I am that type of person, I'm not. Like, I'm not going to walk around all prideful, like, I told you so, you know, you suck and blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't know nothing. Read a book.
No, you love me.
But I saw you defeated and I was like, no, like let's work something out. And I think that's when we decided, I think that.
The 25%.
Yeah, the 25%. And also I was like, because you were like tiptoeing around. You're like, what about my supervisory check? And I'm like, just keep it. It's fine. Like, and you were like, what? So we made sure that you had a good amount. Like, I think on average. Oh, actually, I don't know from the top of my head, but it was like a couple $100s. Whereas before it was like $25 a week. And so now you were like more comfortable of like, I could do what I want. You know, like you're not like, you know, going to Rodeo Drive and getting a Louis Vuitton bag. But
I was up getting my nails.
Yeah. And that I saw like your change of like, we're not only, and that's the thing that I love, is that we're not only achieving the goals that we've set forth with a financial coach, but now you're also enjoying your life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's the best of both worlds. And like, at first when I used to bring it up to you, I'm just like, this is awesome. You'd be like, you were still wearing. I'm like, what are you complaining about? But it's just, maybe it's getting used to. I don't know how you are right now. I haven't honestly asked you, but I mean, from the last year when you did your summer school and you got a couple $1,000s, I mean, you've been enjoying life. I mean, it's up to you how long you make this money last.
Yeah.
But you've been enjoying life. And so we made that agreement, and I think that's what I loved, is like, we were now working together. Mm-hmm. You were happy. I was happy. This whole machine is working perfectly, you know? And, you know, fast forward to right now, like, we've been knocking out our goals. And on that second session that we had with the financial coach, yeah, I remember she was no longer calling you out. Because at the first, you're like, Grace, are you sure you need nails? Let me give you a subscription to, like, clip-on nail or
press-on
nails. And you were mad.
Like, this girl.
And so anyways, for the second session, I remember she was no longer calling you out. She was like, oh my gosh, you guys. Because like the goal was to save like $3,000 every single month.
And
at
I
least.
Think she's used to people putting a goal and not achieving it.
Yeah.
And we like blew it out of the park.
Yeah.
And
she's like, we were doing way more than $3,000.
Holy smokes. Like, you guys are killing it.
Yeah. And so I remember that's when she called me out. And she's like, all right, homeboy, I see the type of guy that you are. You run a tight ship at home. She's like, you need to loosen up. I know you're trying, and I'm so happy that you like are such a goal-oriented person. Mm. But she's like, you need to loosen up. Because one of the questions was, after we reach our goal, because our goal was $3,000 every month for 6 months. And that was to fulfill, like, to finish up our emergency fund. Mm-hmm. And I remember the next question was, well, after the emergency fund, what do we do? And I was ready, like, for the next goal, because my next goal is, like, to save up for a house or whatever. She was like, take a couple months off. And I was like, what? So, yeah, take a couple months off. She's like, do you guys have any plans for Thanksgiving and Christmas? I was like, yeah, well, my mom's coming in Thanksgiving, and then, you know, we have Christmas, my birthday, and whatnot. She's like, have fun. Don't worry about it. And I was like, what? But then that also, like, again, third person. Sometimes you need that third person, that unbiased third person, mm-hmm. just, like, to give you a different perspective. And I was like, you know what? Okay, cool. And that's exactly what we did.
It was so nice.
We enjoyed. And, like, before that, you had always complained about Christmas, because I'd always been like, you got a $250 budget, and you're like, that's not enough. And this is the first time I basically almost loosened all the reins. I was like,
I didn't even know what to spend it on at that point.
Yeah. But that it was a good holiday season. It was a good holiday season. And again, it was a combination of, we still accomplished our goals. We still had fun. And so now we're living both lives, you know? And so right now we are doing great, I'd say. We're saving what we have to save. Where we have zero debt. Well, we have the student loans. That's something that we had been putting off, hoping that Biden, come on, Biden, was going to forgive it. But that's something that my boy Dave Ramsey would have slapped me across the face for, because I've seen many videos of him being like, yo, stop banking on this dude to forgive your loans.
Yeah.
And then later, because we had both been avoiding it. And it's because you had told me, like, oh, like, don't worry, it's going to be forgiven, like, because you were in some sort of teacher program where, like, you work for 4 years in a low-income school and it all gets forgiven. But when I finally looked into it, it's like, nah, none of it works like that. Like, and then you don't get your loans forgiven until after you paying for them for 10 years. I'm like, I am not about to pay for these loans for 10 years. So we finally ripped the Band-Aid, and
we just started paying them. And so our goal is, and we'll be transparent to see if we, like, complete it or not, is in 1 year to pay them off. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping in December to get those completely that way. We have nothing holding us back. And if you originally, that's part of why I didn't even bring it up to David in the beginning, because for me, it was such a big number. I was like, everyone has loans. This is just going to be something we live with. And so I didn't even want to tell you, but when I told you, and then when you did the math and broke it down and it seemed reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, you told me I never believed my student loans could be paid in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then now we're like, okay, let's do it. Let's get it done.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, I used to run around telling everybody, we're debt-free, you know, and it's just because, like, I was under the impression that all your loans, like, grants or whatever, I didn't even know what they were at the time, were going to get forgiven. And until, like, the end of last year was when they sent the letter, like, hey, there's no more pause on the student loan, so time to start paying. I'm like, okay, let's rip this Band-Aid off. It's not a thing that's going to get forgiven. I looked into it. I'm like, okay, cool. I think the original price was $37,500, something like that.
Yeah, close to 38.
And in a matter of 3 months, we are now under $30,000. We're like in the 25 to 29 range. So we're doing great. And again, it's just us doing the hard work, us sacrificing, living below our means. And that's something we want to encourage you guys to do. Live below your means. You don't need all the flashy stuff. Mm. You don't need to go on a trip every 3 months. Budget for it. You can easily budget for it and still hit your goals and still have a good time as long as you budget for it. If you don't have an emergency fund, get that emergency fund to $1,000.
Yeah.
Do this debt snowball effect. Get completely out of debt, get the emergency fund up, and then start saving for your future. Like, we really want to encourage you guys. Like, you guys heard our story right now, and, you know, we went through a long process. Mm-hmm. And one of the thoughts, one of the things that we want to come out of these podcasts and these conversations is, again, if we took, let's say, years to go from point A to point B, and you can listen to this and get from point A to point B a lot faster than us, that is fulfilling to us.
Mm-hmm.
That is so fulfilling to us. And so I just want to encourage you guys, take the step, flip the switch, look for the knowledge, seek a third person like a financial coach if you need one. If you need one, let me know.
Read the book.
Read the book, Dave Ramsey Money Makeover. It's very practical. It's very doable. If you watch his Instagram or his show, you'll see so many people like, we paid $150,000 worth of debt in a matter of like 2 years, whatever. And you're like, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of where there is a will, there is a way. That does not mean you're going to be living a beautiful life. It means that you will be hustling, probably having side gigs. But when you start seeing, if you have debt, when you start seeing that number come down every single month and you put in a goal of, I want to put, let's say, $2,000 towards that debt every single month. And sometimes you're going to be doing like $2,200, $2,300. Like, there's such satisfaction that comes from that. Mm. And you're like, I'm getting out of this. I'm going to be free. And that's part of financial freedom, is not having any debt.
Yeah.
Because having debt makes you a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to encourage you guys, just put in the work, flip the switch, put in the work, seek the knowledge. The knowledge is out there. YouTube, books, financial coaches, like, make it happen. That you can do it, you can do it. And a lot of what the problem is in the American culture is debt. Everyone's trying to sell you debt. Hey, it's free money. It's not free money. There's interest on it and all this stuff. Like, but people get so tied into like wanting all the nice stuff, wanting to impress people. And again, we can get into that in a different episode, the psychology of money. But like, so many people want to impress other people. And like, there's a saying, like, a lot of times you want to impress people that you don't even care about, really.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to encourage you guys, if we can do it, anybody can do it. And that sounds so corny and so like cliche, whatever, but it's 100% true. Put in the work and you can make it happen.
Yeah. I completely agree, because I'm telling you, I was not good with money.
And now we're in a much better place. So that being said, we want to thank you guys for the time that you took to listen to this podcast. I want to say thank you to the people that have reached out as well, saying like this podcast has been helpful. Like, yes, it's very humbling to us to hear you guys say like that you guys are taking the time, because we know that these podcasts are like an hour long or whatever. And for you to take an hour out of your day or days to listen to us, it's very humbling. And we're very grateful to you guys. And we really hope that in every single episode that we put out, we can help you even in the smallest of ways. So thank you very much for listening in. Please remember to like, subscribe, comment, follow, notifications.
Share.
I don't know what else. Follow us on Instagram. We love you guys.
Yes.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.